Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads over the world, and happy Tuesday, everybody. Today is April 28th, 2026. It is a big day. We've got two monster stories going on this morning. The first one, been waiting for this one for a couple of years now. Banger in the Wall Street Journal late yesterday about OpenAI. OpenAI has missed several targets, and apparently they are now rethinking their data center strategy. Right, we all knew this day was coming. We all knew this headline was coming. Math is math. It doesn't matter what that sociopath, narcissist, whatever says at some TED talk about, oh, we don't have enough compute and we're going to build a Dyson sphere at the center of the universe to power our data centers, whatever. Math is math. OpenAI missed several big targets, in particular the billion weekly active users target that they were supposed to hit at the end of last year. Well, it's the end of April and they still haven't hit it. That's a big one. They also missed their 2025 revenue targets. And according to this article, they have also missed several 2026 monthly revenue targets. Hey, it's only April. There haven't been that many monthlies. And if they missed several, that means they missed pretty much all of them, doesn't it? Problems at OpenAI, problems with their business. Remember they just canceled Sora a couple of weeks ago? Remember the, red alert that Sam Altman issued late last year? Things aren't going so good there. And according to this Wall Street Journal article, CFO Sarah Friar is rethinking the company's aggressive data center strategy, worried about meeting their spend commitments. Remember, OpenAI is going to spend a gajillion dollars on data centers, powered by what? Good intentions, apparently. And of course, in typical Sarah Friar fashion, as soon as the story breaks about a thing she says, she comes out and says, no, I never said that. Remember the thing about the government backstopping the debt at that meeting last year that she said? And then a day later, she's like, no, that's not what I said. And everybody was like, Sarah, we all heard you say it. Why are you trying to unsay it now? It doesn't work that way. Well, immediately after this story broke, the company releases a joint statement between Sarah Friar and Sam Altman that says that we are in lockstep unison agreement about buying as much compute as humanly possible. Yeah, okay, says Sarah Friar with a gun to her head. But look, there's also some really important things in this article. Apparently, the CFO is also having doubts about the IPO by the end of this year, saying that they need improvements in internal controls before going public. Yikes. I for one, cannot wait until the OpenAI S1 filing, that document that they file before they go public, because I just think that is going to be loaded with goodies when they finally open up their books to inspection, which may never happen. We've also concurrently got this lawsuit going on between Elon Musk and Sam Altman. It's a long shot. It's probably going to go nowhere, but they might have to go back to being a nonprofit, which would cancel the whole IPO thing, put a big damper on that anyway. Look, anybody having anything to do with OpenAI is not doing so hot this morning. We've got Oracle and SoftBank in particular. We're down quite a bit on this news. I suspect we have got much more bad news on the horizon for this company before not too long. Also, another big one, and this story is just breaking as we speak, like right before I hit record, this story broke. The UAE is leaving OPEC and OPEC Plus effective May 1st. Well, that's Friday. That's like this week. You're not even going to give your 2 weeks notice? You're just out of here. Apparently, the UAE is rethinking their strategy following amid the ongoing war in Iran. Why are they leaving OPEC? The big reason, the immediate reason, the only reason to leave OPEC would be because you want to produce more oil than the cartel is going to let you. So is this a middle finger to Iran? Is this a middle finger to Saudi Arabia? Is this a middle finger to Russia? Yeah, all the above. But at the same time, the cartel has less and less control over oil prices, especially now that the biggest oil producer in the world, the United States, is not playing ball. Venezuela is probably not too far behind them. I can't imagine they're going to stay in OPEC much longer either. And so the UAE is just getting out in front of this. It's hard to control prices when the biggest producers aren't playing ball. And so the cartel's falling apart. That should mean cheaper oil prices on the horizon. Strait of Hormuz notwithstanding. It's, you know, oil was over $100 for WTI this morning. Before that UAE story broke, we're now a little bit below 100, at least right before I hit record, we were. So probably more to come on this one. I don't think they'll be the last to leave, but that is major news. Geopolitical reshuffling is underway. Also on Iran news, there's a story. President Trump says that the U.S. will be reviewing Iran's proposal soon. I don't know why that's news, because the Iranian proposal that came out last week and this BS article in Axios is the same as Iran's proposal has been all along before the last round of peace talks fell apart. It's a non-starter, and the U.S. is like, yeah, we're going to respond soon. We're getting around to it. We're thinking like we might respond to it. Basically means get comfy with the blockades. And it looks like Iran is now getting flooded with oil. We got this other article in the Wall Street Journal talking about how they're now having to store oil in these old derelict tanks. It's basically a war of oil attrition that is going on now. Now that the shooting has largely stopped, emphasis largely, the Israelis and Hezbollah are still shooting at each other. The Iranians may decide to get involved in that. But for now, the ceasefire in name only is still holding. You've got this economic war of oil attrition. All right, we got blockades on both sides. I'm blockading the Strait. Nuh-uh, I'm blockading you. Okay, that's fine. What that means is the world is starving for oil outside the Strait, and inside the Strait, they're drowning in oil. Who blinks first? Who gives up first? That is the competition now. That is what this war looks like. And what the Iranians, and for that matter, the Saudis and everybody else in the UAE and Iraq are trying to avoid is shutting in their wells. Shutting in a gas well or an oil well isn't as simple as just turning off the flow. I'm not an oil field engineer, so I couldn't get into the mechanics of it. It is a long and involved process that is not easily or cheaply reversed. So if they have to shut in their wells, it means oil production is going to be down for a long time. And so they're trying to avoid those well shut-ins by storing oil anywhere they can. So inside the Strait of Hormuz, it's like 2020 COVID oil prices going negative all over again. And outside, everybody's just dying for the stuff. It's pretty incredible what's going on here when you think about it. All right. Also going on this morning, we've got earnings from Coca-Cola, where apparently shrinkflation sells. We got earnings from BP. Oil war is good for the oil business. More news at 11 there. General Motors booked a big tariff refund, even though they haven't got the money yet, but they booked it in their revenue in this latest quarter. Also along the lines of General Motors earnings, we got a story about a big spike in electric vehicle sales globally since the war in Iran broke out, almost offsetting the big decline that we saw at the end of last year when the Chinese subsidies expired. So electric vehicles, that bubble has been bursting for quite a while now. But some signs of life. Higher oil prices, obviously good for electric vehicle sales. We've got JetBlue posting a big loss. Why? Of course, jet fuel. Of course it's jet fuel. When bailout? That's what I have to say. All the other budget airlines are in line for money from the government. Why not JetBlue? And last but not least, we're going to end the show with another science fiction energy story. We've got Commonwealth Fusion Systems. That's a fusion startup backed by Bill Gates and NVIDIA. They have just applied to connect the world's first fusion power plant, a 400-megawatt power plant, to the PJM grid. Guys, that is a press release masquerading as a grid application. It's not going to happen. The technology does not exist yet. A prototype does not exist yet. This company needs to raise capital, and so they're getting free press by applying for a grid connection that may take years or never materialize for a reactor that doesn't yet exist. We'll talk more about that at the end of the show. These stupid energy headlines have got to stop. This bubble just cannot pop soon enough. Yesterday, we were beaming solar power from space down to Earth for Facebook. And today, it's Commonwealth Fusion applying for a 400-megawatt power plant. Just make it stop. Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget the like button and the subscribe button so you can have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every single day. Right now, the S&P is lower by 40 points, 0.5%. Hey, all things considered in that OpenAI story, the S&P is holding up remarkably well. The relentless optimism is not giving way today. The Dow, meanwhile, is up 121 points, or 0.25%. Some of those earnings that we talked about probably pushing the Dow higher this morning. And the NASDAQ, though, is not immune to this OpenAI story, down by 314 points or 1.15% lower. It was down over 350 points at one point this morning, so we've caught a little bit of a bounce. By the way, that bounce roughly coincides with that story of the UAE leaving OPEC. The DXY now is higher by a quarter of a point, 98.73. up by 24 basis points. Again, you know, off the highs of the morning, and that decline roughly coincides with the UAE leaving OPEC. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are largely higher this morning. The 30-year yield is at 4.963. That's higher by 2 points and change. The 10-year yield is at 4.368, 3 points and change higher. The 10-year is grinding back towards 4.4. We've been getting there for a couple of days now. The two-year yield is at 3.840%. That's 3.5 points higher. And the 1 month is at 3.665, actually down by a fraction of a point. We've got the FOMC press conference is tomorrow. We'll see what the Fed says. Looking over at Bitcoin, we've got Bitcoin's down about $1,000 this morning, $76,353, off by about a grand. Bitcoin probably selling off along with tech stocks. Remember, guys, the crypto bubble is now attached at the hip to the AI bubble because a lot of the Bitcoin miners are also data center operators now. So I expect that's probably related to the OpenAI story. Looking over at the commodities board, metals are red again this morning. Spot gold, $45.98, below $4,600, off by $83 and change, or about 1.8% lower. Spot silver is at $73.57, lower by almost $2, $1.95 in the red, or about 2.6% down. But I still like the shiny. Are we going to get a look at silver in the 60s again here? Starting to look like it. Copper down by 1.73%. Platinum down by the same amount. Palladium down about 0.5%. And crude oil is higher here, $99.64. up by $3 and a quarter or 3.37%, although off the highs of the morning, it was as high as 101.81. That dip of about $2 happened after the story about the UAE. Let's take a look at the oil chart here. Oil is still grinding higher, guys. Again, outside the Strait of Hormuz, the world is desperate for the stuff. They're drowning in it inside the Strait. Now been rising for almost 2 weeks or about a week and a half here, hovering right around 100 at the moment. All right, so let's talk about what happened here. This is the joint statement or the statement that was issued by the Energy Ministry of the United Arab Emirates. I apologize for the tiny print. I can't blow this up because Twitter Images is messy like that. But the UAE announces decision to exit OPEC. It's dated today. The United Arab Emirates today announced its decision to exit the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries and OPEC Plus. Effective May 1st, 2026, the decision reflects the UAE's long-term strategic and economic vision and evolving energy profile, including accelerated investment in domestic energy production, and reinforces its commitment to a responsible, reliable, and forward-looking role in global energy markets. The decision follows a comprehensive review of the UAE's production policy and its current and future capacity, and is based on our national interests and our commitment to contributing effectively to meeting the market's pressing needs. There's all kinds of other wishy-washy statements about, we're going to maintain functional markets responsibly, market stability, all that other stuff. But the UAE is basically saying, I'm a big boy now. I'm going to make my own decisions. Saudi Arabia is not going to tell me how much oil to produce. That is pretty much how it is in OPEC, right? Saudi Arabia is the muscle in that organization. We'll see. Are more countries going to follow here? And what I can't really figure out geopolitically, who are they really screwing here? Is it the Saudis? Is it the Iranians? Is it the Russians? Is it all of the above? I just don't know enough about internal OPEC politics to really say for sure. But the UAE has been flirting with this decision for years, mainly because they want to be able to sell more oil faster. They don't want to be beholden to OPEC's quota. And it's kind of a moot point at the moment because the Strait is closed. So they can't really sell anything at the moment outside of the port of Fujairah. Also, as this is going on, Iran is flooded with so much unsold oil that it's stashing it in derelict tanks. Tehran is trying to buy time as the war turns into a race to see whether its oil fields or global consumers can take more pain. That is a strikingly accurate statement there. I mean, that's what the war has been reduced to at this point. Iran is scrambling to find new ways to store its oil, hoping to avoid a crippling production shutdown as a U.S. naval blockade bottles up its exports and negotiations to end the war remain deadlocked. With oil backing up at home, Iran is reviving derelict sites known as junk storage, using improvised containers and trying to ship crude by rail to China. The unusual steps are aimed at delaying an infrastructure crisis and blunting Washington's leverage in the standoff over the Strait of Hormuz. The war between the U.S. and Iran has turned into a race to see whether Tehran's oil industry or global energy consumers crack first. Yikes, that is simple but accurate. Every barrel that can't leave the country through normal export channels must go somewhere, into a tank, onto a ship, into an improvised storage site, or remain underground. Iran hopes to avoid the risk of having to turn off the spigots and deepen its revenue losses, said Sanam Vakil, Middle East and North Africa Program Director at Chatham House, a nonpartisan London think tank. And by the way, guys, while we're on the subject, if Iran is flooded with so much oil that they're stashing it in derelict tanks, then you have to bet landlocked countries or straight locked countries like Kuwait, like Iraq, like Bahrain, probably in a similar situation. The UAE and Saudi Arabia, to a lesser extent, they still have some pipeline capacity that allows them to bypass the strait, but not as much as they normally use. So this isn't just an Iran problem, but this is the calculus of the war now. All right. Can we force the Iran wells to shut in before global consumers crack? And we are tapping into our oil reserves, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, in order to soften the blow to try to buy more time for this war of attrition to play out. All right, now on to this banger in the Wall Street Journal. This one broke late yesterday. OpenAI misses key revenue and user targets in high-stakes sprints toward IPO. The company's CFO and board have questioned the wisdom of massive data center spending in the face of slowing growth. Hot dog, mark the date and time. The company's CFO and board, along with Jack Gamble, have questioned the wisdom of massive data center spending in the face of slowing growth. Yep, you read that right, folks. Gee, if only somebody's been saying that for the last 3.5 years, huh? Am I right? Woo, there's Sarah Friar. Ironically, that picture of Sarah Friar was taken at the last event when she said a thing and then immediately said, no, I didn't say the thing, even though we all heard her say the thing. Yeah, the thing about the government backstopping their debt. Yeah, that was when that picture was taken. OpenAI recently missed its own targets for new users and revenue, stumbles that have raised concern among some company leaders about whether it will be able to support its massive spending on data centers. Chief Financial Officer Sarah Friar has told other company leaders that she is worried the company might not be able to pay for future computing contracts if revenue doesn't grow fast enough, according to people familiar with the matter. Board directors have also more closely examined the company's data center deals in recent months and questioned Chief Executive Sam Altman's efforts to secure even more computing power despite the business slowdown, the people said. The spending scrutiny is constraining Altman's once boundless ambitions ahead of a potential IPO that could take place by the end of the year. Friar and other executives are now seeking to control costs and instill more discipline in the business, at times putting them at odds with their CEO, people familiar with the issue said. All right, and then comes the non-statement from Friar and Altman. We are totally aligned on buying as much compute as we can and working hard on it together every day, Altman and Friar said in a joint statement. Isn't that cute? Any suggestion that the pair are divided or pulling back on securing new computing resources is ridiculous, they said. Says Sarah Friar, the person who said, we want the government to backstop our debt, and then a day later said, no, that's not what I said. What are you, crazy? For years, Altman has sought to lock up as much data center capacity as possible, arguing that computing shortages were the biggest constraint to OpenAI's growth. He went on a deal-making spree last year that put OpenAI on the hook for some $600 billion in future spending commitments and tied much of the tech sector's success to OpenAI's. See also the NASDAQ down 300 points plus today. The buy-everything computing strategy was buoyed by GPT's seemingly invincible success and had the support of both Friar and the board, but the chatbot's growth slowed toward the end of last year, sowing fresh doubt among company leaders about the approach. OpenAI missed an internal goal of reaching 1 billion weekly active users for ChatGPT by the end of last year, according to people familiar with the goals. The company still hasn't announced that milestone, unnerving some investors. It also missed its yearly revenue target for ChatGPT, as well as after Google's Gemini saw massive growth late last year and ate into OpenAI's market share, the people said. The company has also struggled with defection rates among subscribers, according to people familiar with those figures. OpenAI missed multiple monthly revenue targets earlier this year after losing ground to Anthropic in the coding and enterprise markets, people familiar with its finances said. All right, a lot of bad news in there. Number one, two things. They lost market share to Gemini, and now they're losing market share to Anthropic. So ChatGPT, which is the business at the heart of this bubble, is arguably now in third place as far as quality of product is concerned. That's huge, considering how much is riding on this company's business success. They missed their annual revenue target for 2025, multiple monthly revenue targets this year, and as of the end of April, they still haven't hit the billion weekly active users count, which they were supposed to hit at the end of last year. They're not really growing anymore, at least not growing as fast as they wanted to. But there is more going on here as well. In recent months, Fryer has also expressed reservations about OpenAI's plans to go public by the end of this year, according to people familiar with the matter. She has emphasized to executives and board directors the need for OpenAI to improve its internal controls, cautioning that the company isn't yet ready to meet the rigorous reporting standards required of a public company. Altman has favored a more aggressive timeline for an IPO, some of the people said. Wow, it's a little early to be talking about weaknesses in internal controls, isn't it? When the CFO says we can't IPO because we need to improve our internal controls, that's not a good thing, especially not after she's saying we also can't meet our hundreds of billions of dollars in spending commitments and we're not making our revenue targets. This is all stuff that comes out after the IPO and after they pop the champagne in the movie and the rags to riches back to rags story, isn't it? Man, they're really way ahead of the curve here. Everything's going south before they even have a chance to IPO. See also WeWork. Anything tied to OpenAI is hurting this morning. We've got Oracle down 6.9%, trading at $161, off by almost 12 bucks this morning. And SoftBank, who has been piling billions of dollars into OpenAI, that stock down 7.4%. The whole chip space, NVIDIA, CoreWeave, all of them down a percent and change plus today. We'll see what happens here. I mean, right now, ever since this OPEC story has broken, the futures have been recovering a little bit here, now only down 300 points. So we'll see where this one ends up today. And again, guys, we might be talking about a whole different narrative this time tomorrow or this time Thursday, because we've got all those hyperscaler earnings reporting tomorrow. We've got Amazon, Google, Microsoft, and Meta all reporting on the same day, drinking from the fire hose Wednesday night. We'll see what's left of this bubble come that day. All right. And we got a whole bunch of earnings just came out today. Coca-Cola beats expectations with smaller sizes and higher prices. Oh, man, do I hate that headline. That does not say good things about the health of the American consumer, does it? Coca-Cola posted first quarter sales that beat Wall Street expectations, buoyed by brisk purchases of smaller sizes and price increases. Atlanta-based Coca-Cola reported organic revenue growth at 10%, topping the average of analyst estimates. Adjusted earnings per share also outpaced expectations. The results show Coca-Cola's efforts to win over consumers with healthier alternatives to full-sugar soda, such as zero sugar, and diet drinks are paying off. Smaller-sized bottles and cans are also helping drive growth as consumers spend more carefully amid rising energy prices from the war with Iran. So shrinkflation is helping out Coca-Cola. That stock is up 3.6% this morning, $78.14 a share for Coca-Cola. And GM raises their 2026 guidance amid $500 million tariff refund, topping Wall Street's earnings expectations. That's pretty much the whole story here. EPS, a big beat on EPS, right? 370 versus 262. That is almost entirely driven by that tariff refund. Revenue was actually a slight miss at $43.62 billion versus $43.68 expected. GM's International Emergency Economic Powers Act tariff benefit was largely expected by Wall Street analysts, but the exact amount it would receive was unknown. It's part of a $160 billion in potential refunds expected to return to companies after the levies were ruled illegal in February by the Supreme Court in a 6-3 decision. The automaker has not received IEEPA refunds yet, but expects to and decided to book it during the first quarter. So yeah, the stuffing the channel on tariff refunds a little bit there. All right. Yeah, it's probably money in the bank. Let's hope so. Also, it's worth pointing out that GM still expects a tariff impact of $2.5 to $3.5 billion this year, down from the prior estimates of $3 to $4 billion. That's because those IEEPA tariffs were ruled unconstitutional, and then Trump just came back under a different statute and put similar tariffs right back on. So GM is getting their tariff money back. The people who paid those tariffs due to higher prices, though, they're not getting their money back. It's just going to the companies. Remember, all the tariff costs were passed on to the consumers, or at least some of them were. The consumers are not getting their money back. Just the companies are getting their money back. So what was this really? Just one big cash transfer, wasn't it? General Motors stock up about 0.2% here. $78.49 a share, up about 53 cents. Also, electric vehicle sales, you know, speaking of cars here, spiking oil prices spurred an EV buying spree in March. Not too surprising here that more people bought electric vehicles because of higher oil prices. I mean, that's always the draw of an EV. But the size of the spike here is considerable. The war in Iran and the turmoil it has set off in global markets is fueling a surge in electric car sales in much of the world. In March, the first 4 weeks since the bombing began, consumers in France, Germany, and the UK drove off in 206,200 EVs. That is a 44% increase over the year earlier period. In South Korea, electric car transactions more than doubled. And in Italy, where the path to electrification has been slow, 16,000 battery vehicles left dealerships last month, a 67% increase. Those are some pretty serious numbers, right? A doubling in South Korea, 67% in Italy, 44% in France, Germany, and the UK. I mean, that's not a bump. That is a huge spike. The March data suggests that scaling up to electrification can occur at a meaningful pace when market and policy conditions align, said Peter Mock, Europe director at the International Council on Clean Transportation. The coincidence of the recent oil price shock is notable. All right, so here in this chart, you can see this is global EV sales. Let's make this so we can see it. Global EV sales, all right. Pretty significant bump here seen in this month from 651,000 to 1.14 million. Now, you may also note the big decline at the end of December when we went from 1.36 million down to 729,000. Electric vehicle sales were pretty much cut in half globally when the Chinese withdrew their subsidies for electric vehicles. Remember all the big stories earlier this year about curtailing production capacity and overcapacity in China, the car lots full of brand new EVs going nowhere. The Chinese really cracked down on that overproduction. It caused a big decline in global EV sales. And then the Iran war, almost enough to bring us back to where we were before that happened. Not quite enough to offset the decline in China. We also got earnings from BP. The profits more than double, beating expectations as Iran war boosts oil prices. I mean, we don't really need to read any more here, guys. That's pretty much the whole story. War in the Middle East is good for the oil business. And right now, BP is up about 1.7%, $46.75 a share. For BP, I'm assuming ExxonMobil, Chevron, all the big oil majors who report on Friday this week will probably post similar results. Meanwhile, we got another airline slash jet fuel story. This one in Bloomberg this morning. JetBlue quarterly loss widens, airline to deepen cost cuts when bailout. We talked yesterday about how all the budget carriers, Spirit, Frontier, a couple other ones were in line for government money. JetBlue was not on that list, but it appears they're not far behind. JetBlue Airways reported Let's start this one over. JetBlue Airways reported a first quarter loss that exceeded analyst estimates as higher fuel costs and volatile demand continued to weigh on the industry. The adjusted net loss for the 3 months ending March was $322 million compared with the $263.2 million deficit expected by analysts. Big miss there. Operating revenue of $2.24 billion matched estimates. The carrier said it plans to recapture 30 to 40% of fuel cost in the second quarter and 100% by early 2027. That's kind of interesting there. Recapture 30 to 40% of fuel costs in the second quarter. They're going to raise prices, but they can't raise prices quite fast enough. And then by early next year, they expect to raise prices enough to offset this. So jet fares, airline fares are going up, and then they're going to keep going up for a while, is what that sentence tells me. JetBlue also said it's taking out one additional percentage point of capacity for the second quarter and will implement additional cost cuts, including fuel optimization efforts. So they're going to start cutting flights as well. Again, they'll probably be in line for a bailout soon enough. JetBlue stock down 1.3% after falling 6% yesterday, $4.85 a share for JetBlue, off by about 6.5 cents. And now back to the Sci-Fi Channel. We got to talk about more of this silly data center power ideas. Yesterday, we were going to microwave beam solar panels from space down for Meta's data centers. Today, Commonwealth files to connect first fusion power plant to the U.S. grid. Commonwealth Fusion Systems, a company backed by Bill Gates and venture capitalist John Doerr, along with NVIDIA, I might add, is seeking permission to connect what may be the world's first commercial fusion power plant to the biggest U.S. electrical grid. And the crowd goes wild. Fusion systems, which are intended to tap the energy of the stars, have long tantalized the energy industry. While the technology offers potential abundant carbon-free power and at a time of surging electrical demand from data centers, it's unproven at scale or at all. And there are technical challenges such as managing the extreme heat required that need to be addressed. Commonwealth Fusion filed a generation interconnection request with grid operator PGM Interconnection for the 400-megawatt fall line fusion power station it's developing in Virginia, according to a Tuesday statement. The paperwork is required for any power plant connected to the U.S. grid, and it may take 4 to 6 years to receive approval. All right, guys, this is not serious news. And the reason why I'm making a big deal out of this is because we keep seeing these unserious people in the press being taken seriously because of this stupid data center bubble, which, see earlier discussion about OpenAI, is nearing its end. All right, this is science fiction. This is a press release designed to raise capital, masquerading as an application to connect to the grid for a power plant that doesn't even theoretically exist yet. All right, our best fusion researchers, after decades and billions of dollars of research, have managed to sustain a thermal energy positive fusion reaction for a few thousandths of a second. Understand how far that is from a 400 megawatt power plant. Thermal energy means we're getting more heat out than we're putting into the lasers or plasma fields or whatever we're doing to generate the fusion reaction. That doesn't even include all the ancillary systems around this reactor, around all this stuff that also requires power. So they still put more energy in than they can get out, and they can only get anything out for a few thousandths of a second. They still have no way to sustain that reaction. And then once you solve this sustained reaction, you still have to figure out a way to go from that sustained heat of fusion to turning a turbine. You can't just pump water through the things and turn them into steam and spin the blades, because it's a bundle of either deuterium or hydrogen or whatever suspended in a plasma field. You can't just pump water through it. So they're decades away from a fusion power plant. And this is why I went short DJT when they announced that they were merging with a fusion company. There's just too many hucksters out there that are raising capital based on science fiction right now. And there's too many people with too much printed Fed money to spend that are buying into this bullshit. These headlines have to stop. There is legitimate research going on in the field of fusion, and it will get us there eventually. I'm confident in that. Hopefully in my lifetime, not by 2028, we're not going to have a 400 megawatt fusion power plant. This bubble cannot pop fast enough. Well, guys, I just want to say thank you very much for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget the like button and that subscribe button so you can come back tomorrow. Oh, it's going to be a day, folks. You can just tell, can't you? Hey, thank you very much to all my Patreon supporters, YouTube members, and Buy Me a Coffee supporters. Links down below, should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.